All right, Bigfoot says we're ready. You like the audio? Okay, good. Don't cut that out, by the way. Keep it in. All right, they're trying to make us too polished here sometimes. It's like, let's just be raw and roll and do it, be ourselves. So good to see you, Malika.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, so how's life been?
You know, yeah, busy.
Yeah.
It's a busy week.
Exciting times.
Yeah, yeah.
We are talking today about the National Priority Review product recipients. We just announced another batch, and we're going to keep going. We're going to announce more as we get the nominations from the divisions here at the FDA. When they see something that meets one of our national priorities that have been outlined in the criteria, making the price of medications affordable, equalizing prices with other developed wealthy nations, meeting a large unmet public health need or an important public health need, or domesticating manufacturing, which is a national security issue. And we have said very openly that we like medications that reduce downstream healthcare utilization. If there's a medication that's going to reduce the number of dialysis sessions or the number of injections you might need or avert the need for surgery, which is one of the products today we're going to talk about, then that's kind of a game changer, and that's something that I think we don't talk about enough in healthcare. So, good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Ready to roll through the list?
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like we're the press really beat us to the punch a little bit. Right?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, but we get to talk about it.
Just because this is our playroom here, this spot, these chairs. So we like coming here, and every now and then we'll be like, "Hey, let's just go talk about this on the camera." But we get so busy and it gets hard to coordinate, and it's kind of our treat for, you know, getting things done. And so we were able to sneak out here. We tried to do it yesterday. We couldn't. Yeah. We were able to sneak out here to get to do this today. So I'm glad we could do it.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Zongertinab.
This is a product that is produced by Boehringer Ingelheim, and it's for HER2 lung cancer. Already approved by FDA as a second-line treatment. And what's exciting here is that we're going to explore the possibility of it as a first-line treatment. So I think that's exciting. There's been some really good clinical data in the original approval. There was,
by the way, Bigfoot loves first-line treatments, don't you, Bigfoot? Did you hear that first-line treatment well? Do you need her to get closer to the mic?
For cancer.
Good. It's good. Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And for lung cancer, some types of lung cancer, HER2 positive, HER2
mutant.
Yes, you can, HER2 lung cancer, HER2 positive lung cancer. I don't know the ideal nomenclature, but if you have the HER2 gene, mutation, then it's that subtype of lung cancer.
Yep. And the clinical data from a 2025 study, so earlier this year, found that about 70% of patients with previously treated, so this was for the original indication, previously treated HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer with this mutation had a great response, even sustained at a year. So for this to be approved as a first-line therapy would be amazing.
So I'm glad you mentioned that this has already approved for another indication, because in this batch, much more than the last batch of products that were announced, there are more that were previously approved than in the prior batch. So the question might be, well, it's easier to do a priority review, get a decision out in weeks. Well, that is true, and that is in part why they are chosen early in the first two rounds, because we're piloting this program, and it's really changing the process and the structure of the review, retaining the expertise of the division and the primary review team, but it's a new workflow.
Yeah.
So there are entirely novel medications that are in the program, but in this batch, I think it was just one or two out of the six that are entirely novel. So so that's a little background on that question. That question, somebody asked me that question, so I thought I would...
That's a good one. It's a good one to answer. And just to add to that, I think that it's important for us to acknowledge that not all kind of major transformational sort of advances, they don't need to be hard, right? It can be a new population, or in this case, it's adding something as first line rather than second line. So speeding that up, we don't need to be making this more difficult than it needs to be, and we can accelerate things that that are already approved for other indications, and it can make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a study earlier this year in New England Journal that found that 71% of patients with previously treated HER2 mutant non-small cell lung cancer with a mutation in the tyrosine kinase domain treated with zongertinab, this medication, had a confirmed objective response. Mm-hmm. And so that was a bit of the signal
right.
that really prompted this.
Right. And this was observed across patient subgroups. So they looked at sex, age, previous treatment, race, mutation type. So this was a robust response.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting study. I do recommend people read it if you're a medical journal junkie hobbyist that likes rummaging through the medical journals on interesting studies that are maybe not in your field of medicine.
Yeah, always good to read more broadly.
So. Yeah. Okay, great. Bedaquiline.
This one is bedaquiline, yep, for drug-resistant tuberculosis in younger children.
I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Two different
you said ways. It right. I don't know.
Probably ask the companies how they yeah. want us to say it.
And I think what's interesting about this, it is, people think about TB as being something that impacts more other countries than the U.S. But I was really interested, as we were learning about this product, to learn about that rates of TB are actually rising in the U.S., even though the overall number of cases is still fairly low. In 2023, according to the National TB Surveillance System, the estimated number was around 10,000 cases in the U.S., but that was a 16% increase relative to the previous year. So it's something we still need to pay attention to and have those treatments available when needed.
Yeah. I was a little surprised the division that nominated this medication nominated it. But look, if it can help some young kids in the United States or anywhere in the world, then they're all God's children, and I hope it does.
Right. And this is for multi-drug resistant TB. So yes. These are patients who have, are not going to respond to the usual treatments, isoniazid and rifampin.
Pretty uncommon in the United States, but around the world, much more common.
Yep. And with international travel, patients who interact with, family members who might be from other countries. So it's still relevant. It's definitely still relevant for our country.
Edgar Allan Poe die of tuberculosis. Do I have that right?
Oh.
Do you know, Ben? If that's Ben's on it. He's checking out. Now, if I'm wrong, it's going to be embarrassing, but we don't edit things out, so you're going to see
it. I was just going to advise that. Yeah, we could. No, yeah, okay. All right.
Okay, so, all right, great. Interesting. Yeah. Dostarlimab for rectal cancer. Fascinating. And that was the medication I was referring to that actually eliminated the need for surgery, chemo, and radiation in some patients with rectal cancer. I think all the patients in that 2022 New England Journal study,
right,
or at least 12 patients got it. Well, why don't I let you explain it? I don't want to say it was every single patient averted chemo radiation surgery, but the vast majority did.
I think that's right. I don't think anyone did receive chemo radiation or surgery. So these are really remarkable results for this product.
That's amazing. That's literally having a tumor, a GI tumor, melt away with a complete response, or some people know it as a complete pathologic response, also known as a CPR, not the kind you pounce on someone's chest, a CPR or a CR in a patient with a GI tumor. I mean, that is, again, potentially promising. I don't want to say this is like a done deal. We reserve the right to say, look, the trial didn't meet the standards or there was a safety issue, so this is not. My enthusiasm around the potential promise of this medication is not proportional to the likelihood of approval, but pretty amazing if you can melt a tumor away without the need for surgery, radiation, or chemotherapy, especially in the modern era where we are struggling with a healthcare system that's broken and an affordability crisis, whereby if we can reduce downstream healthcare utilization, as we are seeing with this med, then we are taking an entirely new approach to healthcare.
Right. And you think about, you have more experience with this clinically than I would, but the location of cancer and how that, the surgery in for that site-specific tumor can impact the patient, and being able to avoid that for something like rectal cancer is tremendous.
It can be very debilitating to do surgery in the rectum, very debilitating in terms of quality of life. And I mean, it's pretty amazing surgical techniques now to reconstruct a rectum or to be able to go lower down with adequate margins. But look, if a tumor can melt away and you can easily surveil it, which is what they did, keeping an eye on it, that's a pretty amazing thing.
Yeah, this is an exciting advance.
Yeah, this is a real, I mean, every now and then you see real leaps forward with in medicine.
Yeah.
Now, this is a PD-1 blocker, I think. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Great. Anything else you want to say on dostarlimab?
No, I think the main thing is phenomenal initial results in that study. So.
Great. Casgevy? I don't know if I'm saying it right. Casgevy?
I'll go with that one.
Okay.
This is for sickle cell disease and beta thalassemia. This produced by Vertex Pharmaceuticals. This is a cell-based gene therapy using the CRISPR technology that's been, you know, in the news for a while at this point. But but it's exciting to see it make its way into our therapeutics. I don't know if you want to say any more about this, but
no, I just remember. It seemed like there might also be a potential indication for a subtype of beta thalassemia. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's right. And sickle cell disease, I wouldn't say it's common, but it does impact certain subpopulations. And, you know, it's highly prevalent in certain subpopulations of the U.S. And by making this available to a broader age range, we can intervene earlier in the trajectory of sickle cell disease and prevent downstream complications that happen and emerge at later ages. So this is really exciting as well.
Cool. Great. Well, look forward to seeing that process play out. Now, there are two GLP-1 drugs that are on the list. Yeah. And the reason they're on the list is that these companies are radically reducing the price of their medication, making them more affordable. You know, in some areas of the country, obesity is a disease of poverty in areas where there are food deserts. And so many people who may benefit the most from the GLP-1 medications are the ones that have the biggest barriers to access. And so by lowering the price of these medications from over $1,000 to $150, $250, that is a major advance in the ability for Americans to get these medications. And by the way, they've been priced around that amount in other wealthy countries around the world. So this was really a monumental step in terms of the affordability. We're learning more about GLP-1 medications now for other health-related, obesity-related conditions, health complications that people are realizing, hey, almost every disease process in the body has some interface with insulin resistance, glucose metabolism, and general body inflammation, all three of which are things that are believed to be reduced by GLP-1s. Shouldn't be the first line. Should be doing other things. We should recognize obesity in some patients as a glycemic addiction, just like other addictions. And so it's hard to go cold turkey. It's hard to get people to change their behavior without support or help. Some people can do it. Others struggle. But just saying exercise more and, you know, eat better does not work for the vast majority of people. So we either need more intensive behavioral therapy or coaching. Mm-hmm. But we also need to be able to have these options available because we live in a real world and people are getting into serious health complications because of obesity in a way that is preventable. They are avoidable.
Right. Yeah.
So that's one. Domestic manufacturing is another criteria met by these mm-hmm. companies. They're going to be manufacturing in the United States. And it is, in a sense, addressing a large public health need. Yeah. So that reduces downstream healthcare complications, reduces downstream healthcare utilization. So it essentially meets almost all criteria to varying degrees.
And just to add to that, you know, by making these products more available and accessible within the U.S., we can, you know, I think there have been, historically, there have been some concerns about safety for compounded products that or that may or may not even be include the ingredient of, you know, that people are trying, that claiming that they are, you know, making available. So by making this, you know, product more available through the approved pathways, we're keeping patients safer as well. So I think this is great.
I firmly believe, you know, I'm fascinated with certain public health concepts like the moral hazard and access to care being a factor in the efficacy of a healthcare intervention. So if you have a medication that is 70% effective, but can only reach 50% of candidate patients because of the affordability problem or access issues, the real population level efficacy is 35%. It's half of the 70%. So we need to think about access to medications and affordability as a public health community, not as just an agency, but as a public health community in a new light. And so I think that was a bit of the basis also for what you're describing.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to also briefly touch on, it's neat to see FDA explore its regulatory authorities to help with you know, affordability. This is not something, I don't think we've really done it to this extent before. I mean, we've done it with generics and trying to improve that process, but the voucher program is definitely an interesting path to make that happen.
You know, it's interesting, early in the discussions when we talked about, can we legally make affordability a criteria for the national priority reviews? After all, it is a national priority in healthcare. The initial thought by some was that, well, it doesn't really fit the traditional model, but then people started raising the public health aspect of affordability, that it is directly proportional to access, and that is directly proportional to the public health clinical benefit.
Yes.
So I do believe that the FDA is not involved in setting drug prices. We don't have a requirement for a certain price point. But when we see major actions by a company to increase the affordability, that is a public health benefit in our mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Do you want to mention the other one, or did we sort of cover it by talking about GLP-1s?
So I think it's worth a mention. So this is orforglipron. Also, you know, for the usual, we've seen indications, obesity and related health conditions, Eli Lilly. And what's novel about this is that it's oral. So people hate to give themselves injections. They hate injections.
I don't like them.
Yeah, no one likes injections.
And I'm not saying I take GLP-1s. Yeah. And if you do, it's okay. But I don't like injections. Yeah. I don't like needles personally.
Right. And not liking something translates to adherence, right? So you're actually, you're potentially improving adherence and health outcomes as a result of changing the formulation. So this is a big advance, even though it's the same ingredient or similar.
Yeah, you could use the same principle. If you have a medication that is 50% efficacious, but half the patients who are candidates don't feel comfortable using a needle, the medication on a population level of candidate patients is really only 25% efficacious. So it's the same principle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you also think about, you know, injection site reactions, and in this population, patients who have comorbid diabetes, and that can injections can translate to infection. So there are a lot of potential benefits with something as what might seem as simple as just a dose formulation change. It's more than that.
Yeah. Again, not a first-line treatment, GLP-1s. We want to emphasize that. We're pushing a very aggressive healthy food agenda and Make America Healthy Again agenda. So that's important. Anything else you want to say on this stuff?
No, I think it's an exciting second batch.
Yeah, it's a great second batch. Good job.
Thanks.
Great job with this program. And to all the scientists here and managers and people handling the workflow that are willing to try something new in this pilot program, it really warms my heart to see them excited about it and them say, hey, we've got this medication in the pipeline that we think might be a good candidate for this. So it's just, it's fun to see that chatter in at the agency here. So, Ben, was I right about Edgar Allan Poe?
Mother died of tuberculosis. They don't know if he died of it.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably, though. Maybe.
Probably.
Maybe.
But.
Yeah. It's a good guess.
Yeah, I'm curious if maybe it was around the same time. But I think, you know, he was in Baltimore. He had a home near Johns Hopkins. There's a little interest in Edgar Allan Poe in Baltimore because he's a Baltimore guy. I was not a Ravens fan because the Ravens were not there at the time. But hopefully,
although there was a Raven, I think, in one of his stories. Wow,
is that right? That's right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. that's my
common knowledge for the day.
for people, good contribution.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, you've had many contributions to this conversation, but that was a good one also. The Ravens name is interesting because I don't want people out there to think that Baltimore just has a flock of Ravens constantly circulating around it. It's like the Buffalo Bills. Like, I don't think there are Buffaloes.
Maybe one time there was, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not now.
Broncos.
For sure.
Maybe there are Broncos.
Yeah.
In that area. Although Broncos, I believe, are not native to the United States.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm not going to make you fact check that one, Ben, because I might be very wrong on that. And Bigfoot's laughing, which is good. We're going to get Bigfoot on set. People say, we don't know if we believe in Bigfoot.
Yeah.
And I say, I get it. You don't see his face on the set. Mm-hmm. But at some point, we're going to invite Bigfoot to come on camera and show his birth certificate. And you can see that it probably says Bigfoot on the birth certificate. It is the name that he goes by. So are you pleased, Bigfoot? Yeah.
I have one question.
GLP-1's not first line. I know you like first line medications. Second, yeah. Second or third, yeah.
All right, I have one question
for you. To behavioral interventions.
Before we end.
Yes.
Just to get you back for the last podcast.
Okay.
Are you more afraid?
Oh, boy.
Of spiders or snakes?
Snakes.
Okay, talk about that.
For sure. Well, sometimes when my golf ball goes far into the rough in a course in the Midwest, United States, I'm looking for my ball, which has a market value of about $1.50. And I keep hunting for it. And I can hear some snakes sometimes. And I perceive that I should still look for my ball. And then I do a Pascal's wager of the risk-benefit ratio and recognize that what I'm doing is insane. Mm. I'm trying to find my ball in order and taking serious risks. Yeah. So
it's snakes, hands down.
Snakes for sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not afraid of spiders at all.
Mm. Wow. No. Not even tarantulas?
Not even tarantulas?
Yeah.
Never seen one.
Okay.
Outside of a zoo or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. We're even now.
Okay. Yeah. Good. We're even. Keep it coming. All right. Good to see you,
yeah,
Malika.
Nice to
Thanks
see you.
For doing this. Yeah. Hopefully this was... You enjoyed this as much as we... I wanted to say hopefully you learned something, but some people may decrease in knowledge from hearing our banter. And that's okay. That's okay. We're just having fun. This is therapeutic for us. Take a little break from a busy day. So thanks for joining us, and we'll
Thank
do it
you.
Again.
Bye.